to Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. In each of our programs, our intention is to bring to our listeners the people, places, and projects of Northern California that we think you're going to enjoy and that we think are valuable. We have in the studio today Redding City Manager Barry Tippin. He's going to tell us all the good things that are happening with the city of Redding. Welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Been far too long since I've had you in here.
Yeah, it's
so
been
thank
a while.
You. Yeah, it's challenging with schedules. I want to start off, maybe there's someone out there that could be any place in the world, and they're going, oh, what's going on in Redding, California? But what is the role of a city manager?
That's a good question. I think the easiest way to describe it is a city manager is like the CEO of a company. And so my responsibility is to take the policy direction from the board of directors, or in our case, the city council, and then to put that into effect through our departments, police department, fire department, community services, you name it, and make sure that all of the rows are rowing in the same pace, the right direction. And with 1,000 employees, it can become a challenge at times. But that's kind of the best way to put it is, you know, my job is to make sure that the council's policy directions are being adhered to, which includes, you know, not only more current and recent direction, but also the directions of the past that find their way into resolutions and the ordinance or the law of the land for the city, and making sure that we're doing everything in accordance to all of those rules.
Excellent, excellent. I'm curious, too, where you grew up.
Well, I grew up essentially in two places, Redding and Tahoe City. So I had I was born in Mercy Hospital, and we lived in Palo Cedro at the time on Melmar Avenue. And then my dad worked for Clare Hill. And when Clare Hill was going to become CH2M Hill, he told all of his employees he couldn't promise anything. Of course, we know what CH2M Hill became, and my dad decided to take another job as a surveyor for Ray Vale and Associates, and that was up in Tahoe City. So lived up there until 1979 and then returned here and as a sophomore in high school and finished at Enterprise High School.
Excellent. Where'd you go after high school?
Shasta College, 2.5 years, Chico State, 2.5 years. Then my wife was still in school, so we stayed in Chico till 1991, and then we returned. And we weren't empty-handed at that point. We had a two-week-old son, and so we returned in 1991 and have been here ever since.
Yeah, what drew you to apply to be city manager?
Well, it was actually the former city manager, Kurt Starman's fault.
Blame him, huh?
Yeah, he was a year younger than I am, and I always felt that he would retire before me, and then I'd have a year to break in a new city manager, and then I would retire myself. Well, he retired early, so I was struck with the idea that I had to either decide to try to become a city manager or figure out who was going to be my boss for the next 5 to 8 years. And so I applied, and luckily enough, they hired me.
Excellent. Do you enjoy your work?
I do. You know, there's challenges, certainly. You know, and there's frustrations, and you know, there's a lot of things that don't go my way, you know, there's always the ups and downs like any business that you have. But you know, I really enjoy the change of every day. I really enjoy the flexibility of what we do. You know, there's not too many jobs where, you know, one day you might be talking seriously about how to use grants to affect change within our homeless community and help, right? And the next meeting, you're actually talking about, you know, what we do for enhancing incarceration programs, right? I mean, you know, those, and that's just in the one department, right? And so you take that and just, you know, magnify it by any number of multitudes, and you kind of get what my life is like. It's different every single day. I actually stopped, you know, I don't keep lists of what to do. I used to, when I was an engineer, I had to-do lists, but it doesn't make any sense because to-do lists go out the door like 15 minutes after I get to work.
That's funny. That's great, though. That diversity of challenge, though, would make it interesting, I would think.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. And then when you're working with council members, you know, you have a this, you know, five separate and distinct connections back out to the community, you know, who they're connected with, what questions are coming into them, what are their ideas, what, you know, do they want to see, and what are their goals, and then having to weave that in to the overall patchwork of what we do without violating Brown Act, which means they can't talk amongst themselves, and I can't tell one what the other one thinks.
Yeah.
Right? So trying to take all of that information and weave it into a coherent plan and move forward is always a challenge as well, but it's exciting too.
Yeah, yeah. You know, I've been here long enough to remember before we have the current City Hall, 777 Cypress, and I so appreciate and value. I love the beauty of the City Hall. It's very nice having the fountain, sculpture garden. It just is very thoughtfully put together.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to work for the city before I came over. So I started the city in 2004 as the city engineer, and I was working for Caltrans, and I had an opportunity to apply and try to become an employee of the city, but I wouldn't do so because they were working out of double-wide trailers.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think back on that, and, you know, obviously one of my important jobs today is succession planning for, you know, the city, make sure we're hiring good quality employees and that we're bringing them up, and so we have, you know, continuity. And I think back on how the old City Hall impacted me and my, you know, really aversion to working for the local municipality because they weren't and showed no pride in themselves.
Yes.
And so that really changed things when I got the call as to whether or not I wanted to, you know, seek employment at the city. It's a game changer for me.
Yes. And I think it makes an impression for people versus the old rundown, all that, like you said, double wides and dilapidated buildings that needed to be replaced. And then you have this beautiful City Hall. It makes a statement of we're in this and we're engaged and we're proud.
Yeah. And I was happy that the county built theirs as well,
because
it gives the same message. Now, for some reason, we took more heat than the county did, you know, for years, and I'm sure we're still called the Taj Mahal. The reality is the county building is a little nicer than ours. They've got marble flooring everywhere, so, you know, they have a very nice building, and I think just as important for them to have that. I do always find it curious as to why the city took more heat for our building than the county took for theirs.
Don't you think it's because you were first?
I think it's because we're first, and I think just naturally the focus of city residents is the city government.
Yes.
Than the county government. I think it's a natural occurrence, but yes. I still like to point out that theirs is nicer than ours.
And in the confines or the perimeter of the city of Redding, we now have the new courthouse as well.
Yes. Yeah.
County courthouse.
Yeah, and there's, as you well know, having business over there, but it's not without its, you know, bumps and bruises along the way. Because not only do we have a new courthouse, we have new parking systems because of the development of downtown, and you know we're all finding our way through all that. And you know, I'm very confident that we'll get to the other side, and everybody will have a happy medium. You know, it's one of those things that I think nobody will probably be perfectly happy, you know, that it worked out the way they wanted. But I think we'll all find that, you know, that common ground as people, you know, learn how to park, where to park. We can make changes within those parking arrangements to meet what the community is doing. And so we've been committed to that. We've made some changes already. And so that includes working with the courthouse, you know, and something as simple as they said, okay, fine, there's going to be parking, paid parking around the courthouse. But, you know, jurors need 4 hours. For parking.
Oh,
they can't do a two-hour parking limit.
Oh.
Because they're in court.
Whoops. Yeah.
And so, obviously, we went, yeah, well, we didn't really think about that. So, we were able to go back to council, and there's a number of spaces around the courthouse now that are four-hour parking.
Excellent.
So that jurors who want to park closer, you know, instead of in the parking structure or something, they can do so, and they can make that choice. And that's really what we're attempting to do, is relieve the general fund of the financial burden of the parking system, which it used to have, enhance turnover for businesses and retail, but still try to meet the needs of the people who need longer term parking or free parking. And so that's a, you know, something that will morph over time, and I'm confident that we'll settle into a satisfactory solution.
Yes. I know, being for my office being downtown, two different locations, parking has always been an issue. There's always been a high demand and limited spaces. So I think the attention to try to have it regulated through the fees probably encouraged some of the people that would just park there all the time forever have made that a difference. Scenario.
Yeah, and we also fully anticipate that over time, you know, there's, I think some people know, some people don't, there's a lot of county offices that are downtown.
Yeah.
So that is not similar to many downtowns, right? So, you know, the normally have retail and you have other, you know, businesses that might have in and out for their clientele, as opposed to hundreds of employees that are just downtown 8 hours straight a day. And so as that changes, as, you know, either business owners choose to move in a different direction or the county, you know, finds different office space for their employees, that'll change the dynamic of that parking again. And so we'll have to see what happens, make those changes. And, you know, that could go any which way. We could end up with, you know, additional paid parking spaces, or we could end up with more free spaces. Mm-hmm. Because as 8 hour employees move away and we have more turnover just naturally because of the, you know, the environment of downtown, you know, then we can make adjustments to our parking system as well.
You know, I think the downtown area is much more beautiful, and I love having access through the bikes and the thoughtfulness about creating space for bikes to be on the road. I think that's an attractive thing for people to visit, and as well as people who live here.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've really tried hard through grants and other funding mechanisms to connect our trail system. I think everybody really knows that. But what we had really been missing is that connection to downtown. You know, and as we want to continue to enhance downtown and encourage people to come downtown, that's such an obvious connection point to make. And we finally found granting sources in the state of California, you know, stepped up through some of this combined housing, you know, and mobility funding to provide us the opportunity. So now we have the cycle track that's in existence and is going to continue being expanded into downtown. We've got the connection down to the Civic Auditorium and to the rest of the trail system that direction. You know, there's connections all the way out to Shasta College, you know, through various means. Sometimes you have to hop on the road for a brief period of time, but there's still good connections, and we've tried to make sure that those roads that you have to go on have 4 foot shoulders, so that, you know, even though it's a shared space, it's more comfortable than just a line and, you know, dirt or sidewalk. So I think it's great that we have that opportunity. And McConnell Foundation with their, you know, new bike depot where you can actually store your bike while you go explore downtown is going to be a tremendous thing.
Yes, and I can say I'm also partial not only to the bike depot, but to the new restaurant right there. Ooh, tasty.
Yeah, I just had lunch there today. Yeah, we
I did last week, first time.
Yeah, we had a sort of little office celebration.
Oh, cool.
I will, you know, fess up that it was actually our delayed administrative staff appreciation day. We missed it because of meetings, and so we had that today.
Good.
And yeah, it was a great lunch, and you know, it's really, really good food, and I'm happy that they've landed here.
Oh yes, I can recommend the beet salad.
I had the ahi tacos today.
Ooh, so see, yeah. It's very good food. So, you know, some people don't realize it's there because, you know, that building's been there a while, but it's on the corner of California at, is it Shasta?
It's California and Shasta.
Yes, yes. It's just wonderful. You can park. There's plenty of parking around, and it's just delicious food.
Yeah, and I would say that people kind of know where it's at because usually it's really crowded.
Yes, you can tell the challenge of parking. It's a good reason. Also, when you look at downtown, the Market Street area transformed, I think, is a great strategy to invite people to be out on the street, be attending events and things. City of Reading has worked hard on that.
Yeah, I like to, when we talk about the, you know, downtown, a lot of people focus on the last 5 years, you know, when we've seen the construction go up. Mm-hmm. But it really, it it starts back in the 60s. You know, we had a thriving downtown, and then like many downtowns, a freeway got built.
Yeah.
And pulled all that traffic away from your downtown core. And, you know, we as a community never stopped believing in building our downtown and having a thriving downtown. And there are so many people that have stayed engaged in that whole effort, you know, the long-term property owners downtown who have really had to struggle to find tenants sometimes and stay the course, and that things will happen. City councils that never, you know, stepped away and said, we're not going to focus on that and we're not going to put funding there. You know, sometimes we hear that how silly the mall was, you know, that we had. But the reality is I look at that as a dedication, that willingness of a council to step out and take some risks to keep downtown alive. And, you know, while that didn't pan out perfectly because Mount Shasta Mall got built and, you know, took the mall scene away,
mm-hmm.
You know, we kept at it, and we've always had a policy and a goal to have at least 300 living units downtown, because you can't have a thriving downtown without people who live downtown. And so, you know, we're really close to that now with the new housing that's been constructed, and you're seeing the benefits of that. You're seeing retail stores having success. You're seeing restaurants having success and bars, and you're seeing people who want to hold events in the spaces downtown,
mm-hmm.
more so than they did before. And so, you know, I say that the success of downtown rests in obviously all those individuals, private sector people, public people who have stayed the course and made sure it happened. And so I just think, you know, what we have today is special compared to a lot of downtowns. In fact, Chico's coming to try to learn how we did it.
Yay.
And so we're doing a tour with them and sort of giving them some insights. The one thing I can't help them do is reverse the time clock by 40 yeah. years. Because I lived in Chico. I went to Chico, and I lived there for about 4 years after I graduated. And, you know, it was a great downtown. But I think, you know, they had the natural reliance on the student body just
yes.
to keep downtown alive. And now that we've moved into an era of online shopping and
yes.
all of social media, and people aren't necessarily just going to, you know, connect with their friends at a local pub or something,
mm-hmm.
their downtown has begun to suffer, and they, like every town, wants to revitalize that. And so they're going to come talk to us about it.
Excellent. That's nice to hear that. I'm going to do a station ID. When I come back, I would like you to talk a little bit more about the strategy of having and, you know, people that are living in the residential space above the businesses, how do they find out who to contact to see if something's available? If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I'm Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here with the city manager for the City of Reading, Barry Tippin, and we're talking about all the good things that are happening in Reading, meeting some of the challenges of evolution through time. And we were talking about the old downtown mall. I can remember its heyday when it was very thriving, and it was, you know, a lot of things going on, and through the evolution of time with the Mount Shasta Mall, it drew things towards the interstate. And it's good that the community has been able to revamp things and bring more vitality downtown. So talking about having businesses down below and residents above, who applies for those? Who are those available to, or rent or lease or?
Yeah, they're almost exclusively rentals.
Okay.
And so depending on which building you're at, it is who you would contact. So
okay.
Shervin Square, for instance, across the street from here, that's privately owned. And so, you know, in fact, there's two different owners, you know, on the apartments up top. So those are different individuals. And I don't know who their property management company is, but you know, they have, you know, they're most of those, some of them are affordable units, some of them are market rate.
Okay.
If you go to the new ones that K2 built, K2 is responsible for, you know, leasing those out, and they are eligible for people who make 80% of the median income, and that it starts off at a certain level for a single individual, and then it goes up depending on how many people in your household. So I think like for a family of four, that number is about $88,000. So, and I point that out because, you know, when people hear affordable housing, they sometimes they have negative connotations about what it is.
Yes.
And they, you know, we try not to use the term low income housing anymore because it's just not what we're talking. People think automatically of, you know, the projects.
Yes.
We've all watched the movies, you know, where they have these gangs and the projects of Chicago or something like mm-hmm. that. That's not what this is. This is these are working people. These are working families. And especially given the wealth disparity that has grown over the last 20 years, people who, you know, make $88,000 and have, you know, a family, you know, a spouse and two kids, that's relatively common.
Yes.
And so these are units that help them get into safe, decent housing. And I've always use, you know, the people in the service industry, you know, whether they're working at Walmart or Home Depot or Lowe's or whatever, that's the type of person that we're talking about. And so those are eligible for those people. And we have a number of those units downtown. Over on Placer, there's a few of them, and the new building where the Taroko restaurant is. And they're scattered around town in a few spots, but there's also quite a few market rate, you know, for those who make more than that, but they still want to live downtown. So, kind of depends on where you're at as to who you talk to.
Yeah. It's nice though, having that diversity. And for people that are maybe even totally new to Reading, can you broad stroke talk about the groups that have been involved in helping, inspire the growth downtown? You mentioned K2.
Yeah. So that's, you know, I'm going to miss so many people
yes.
because I go back in time and, you know, we really like to talk about like people like Brian Leidig, and he's owned his property for a long time. And he's just, you know, really made sure that downtown is, you know, a place to be. And he's worked hard and he's been a stalwart for that. He's given us a lot of grief over the years, you know, but his intentions are so pure in terms of wanting downtown to be successful.
And his property downtown is what?
Yeah, it's just right in the Market Street. And in fact, we used to have the detectives, our police department detectives used to be in his building. Yeah. But of late, really the drivers behind the two new buildings and a lot of that work that's been going on is the McConnell Foundation and K2 Development and the city in partnership.
Yes.
And so collectively we put together applications for what's called the AHSC, Affordable Housing and Sustainable Communities Grants. And we were able to land like almost $50 million worth of grants collectively as a partnership to get those buildings built. And so that include the parking structure. The Shasta College has been very instrumental in building that building on the just to the south of Tehama.
Yes.
And which is right next to the parking structure. And so Shasta College has been really instrumental as well, because, you know, everybody remembers that they were one of the first big new investors,
mm-hmm.
right? They built their campus there.
Yeah.
They could have built it where they're at. They could have built it somewhere else. They chose to be downtown. So Shasta College has really been instrumental as well.
Yes. I think it makes such a huge difference. And I know sometimes people wonder why McConnell Foundation would want to be involved at all. But if you look at their mission, you know, helping build better communities through philanthropy, they're looking at ways to help a community thrive. They don't go in and do 100% of stuff. They want partnerships so that there's a buy-in from the community itself. But having those dollars that help to keep a project online, make it happen, I think is invaluable.
Well, they close gaps for yes. financing. You know, they have sustainability. They can offer great stability for financiers. You know, if you're having to go for private financing, they've just been a tremendous partner everywhere around town for us,
yeah.
for sure. I mean, soccer park. You know, there's just almost too much to mention as how awesome the McConnell Foundation has been for the city of Reading and Shasta County and elsewhere.
North State.
Yeah, but they've made the downtown city of Reading as one of their mission statements. So of their strategic plan, this downtown Reading, and what they do is they adopt it every year. And so when you get put into it as the strategic plan, you know, it goes for 10 years. And so if they adopt it again the next year, then it runs 10 years from then. So they've adopted downtown Reading as part of their strategic plan for about, I don't know, 6-7 years in a row now. Mm-hmm. And we definitely couldn't have done this without them.
Yeah. I think it's invaluable to have their participation. Anything else around downtown that we haven't covered that we should touch upon? Or do you feel like we've...
I think we've touched upon it really well, but I also just, you know, come downtown, experience it for yourself. It's just more and more thriving. I went to the tree lighting ceremony in early December, and we had a drone up from our communications team. And I don't know, you know, there's a certain president that would say it was the largest crowd we ever had. It felt like the largest crowd we ever had. You know, it was really, really awesome. We had so many people downtown. It was such a great event, and the restaurants were full. The crowds were all over the streets, and everybody was happy. Those are the things that just are such a great thing for downtowns.
Yes.
Right? It's our gathering space. It's we should just cherish what we have here.
Absolutely, and I think it's really good to have that state designation of having a cultural district.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up.
Yes.
Yeah, and we try to capitalize on that, and we're trying to do more and more. And Viva Downtown is doing a great job of, you know, getting that message out and being a group that is nonstop.
Yes.
Promoting downtown.
Yes. Shasta County Arts Council, Cascade Theater. I mean, we have the Riverfront Playhouse. I mean, there's lots of nice things going on downtown.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's amazing. I've always been inspired by what I've witnessed. It's really amazing. So before we run out of time, we could talk all day probably about downtown, but I would like to touch upon what's going on with the Riverfront project.
Yeah. So the Reading Riverfront specific plan update. So sometimes people don't realize that we've had a specific plan since 1992. So it's not like we've created this out of raw cloth and decided that we should do this.
Right.
We've needed to update this plan for a long time. And when we had the opportunity to dedicate some of the ARPA money, the American Rescue Plan Act money that was put out after the COVID pandemic, you know, whether you agree with that money being put out there or not is kind of beside the point. But we elected to take a portion of that money and update our specific plan. And why that was so important is that we knew that our facilities are beginning to age and they need a lot of attention. We knew that the lease between McConnell and, you know, the Kuchar's lands expired, and that Chris Kuchar's had taken back over that property, and that he has an interest in helping develop that it was ripe to re-engage the community and say, what do we want to do with these properties? And so we're almost through the visioning stage. And that what that means is that we'll be presenting to the council probably in April what it all looks like. In other words, on the south of 44, which is all privately owned land except for the streets, you know, what should that be? And what should the zoning be? And how should we change the zoning to represent what the community wants? So that what gets built there, maybe mixed use, which is apartments and restaurants and that sort of thing, and trails along the river so that there's better public access so you can access the riverfront. And then to the north, what sort of facilities do we want? You know, and I think we all recognize that in the short term, you know, we have existing rodeo grounds and we have existing civic auditorium and other buildings there, private ownership and Sheraton and Turtle Bay. In the short term, it's more likely than not that it's refurbishing what we have, right? And making what we have better. But what about 40 years from now? What about 30 years from now? What opportunities are there? What can we envision that could look like? And so all of that will be presented to the city council. We're going to have one more community meeting. We haven't set the date prior to that time, probably at the Civic Auditorium, to let people come in and see what's been envisioned by all of their neighbors and using our professional consultants to help guide that. And then we'll present that to the city council and see if they can, you know, collaborate and come together on a vision on what that should be. From there, we go and start developing the final document, and we develop the environmental impact report to account for, you know, the protection and preservation of cultural sites and endangered habitat and, you know, and traffic and socioeconomic issues and just all the stuff you deal with an environmental impact report.
Yeah. Anything anymore with construction, you would have an environmental impact report.
Yeah. Everything. There's a few levels of what you have to do in terms of completing the document, but bigger projects typically will lead you to the full, what's called EIR.
Makes sense. And I think it's important for people to realize that they can have a voice. They can find out about the meetings. They can go to the meetings. What's the best way for people to find out about how to show up or tune in?
So if you go on our website and you go to government and then you go to agendas, it will publish all of our agendas. We also have videos. So if at the top of that menu, you can just click video and you can go to the current meeting that's running and you can watch it live stream. There's about a 5 to 8 second delay, just technology wise. You can watch it the next day because it gets streamed. You can watch it live and in rerun on cable channels. And so there's lots of opportunities to view those. You can also get on a mailing list if you like. But most of the time, our agendas are posted on Thursday afternoons. Mm-hmm. So we have our regular council meetings are the first and third Tuesdays. And we post the agendas the previous Thursday. When we have a special meeting, that usually has 24 to 48 hours of notice. And you can see that come up. And we oftentimes put out a press release and put it on our social media so that the community is aware that we're having a special meeting as opposed to the regular meeting.
Yes. And I think it's really good that people, you know, if you tune into the social media, you find out about a lot of things and you can and become aware and you can follow so that you are notified when things happen.
Yeah. And so we have all your standard social pages, right? We have Nextdoor and Facebook and Instagram. You know, there's certain ones we can't, Snapchat and TikTok. They don't have the file storage. As a public entity, we have to have file storage for what we post. And so some of those socials don't have the legal requirements for that, and so we can't use them.
Yes, yes. There's that, huh?
Yep. There's all sorts of those little government rules.
Yes. So we'll look forward to April to seeing about how that shapes up for that initial.
Yeah, it should be. It should be. I think a really great opportunity to comment. But also, I think what we're going to find is that what the community has coalesced around is going to be a good vision.
And at times, I know the city of Reading has sent out surveys or posted on social media and through press releases, invited people to give feedback. And I really appreciate and value the fact that they reach out to community and say, hey, we want to hear from you. Not only are the meetings open to the public, but they encourage, you know.
Yeah, we had, it's in one way, it's a little frustrating at times because we had about 120 people that came in person and they, they were able to fill out the surveys right then and there. And we posted it online. We had about 1,000. So if you think about 95,000 people that live here plus 120,000 just in our geographic area that use this space, it's the engagement is not great.
Yeah.
But, we got 1,000 and a lot of good feedback. And so we're taking that, extrapolating that to the rest of the community and, pushing it into a plan. And hopefully the next public meeting will have, some additional opportunity to engage the public and find out that we're on the mark or not.
Yes. And I really do. It's the point of these programs that I do is to invite people to become engaged and to participate in things that go on, to have a voice, to know what's going on. It's our community and we can be part of shaping that by giving our voice. It doesn't mean you have to go to every single meeting. I think it's always good if someone has never been to a city council meeting, go. You learn how government functions. There's a place where you have an opportunity to share for 3 minutes your perspective. And I think it's important for people to be engaged in the community. It's hard to believe that out of all the thousands that we have that so few actually voice something.
Yeah. I like to remind people that of any government they pay attention to, any level of government, the city's the one that's going to impact your day-to-day life more than any other.
Yes.
Whether it's just the utilities that flow to your house, the roads you drive on, the police force that protects you and the fire department that protects you, that impacts you day in and day out way more than a federal government.
Yes, absolutely. I always tell people local elections and presidential elections are really critical.
They matter.
yes, definitely. Take a station break and come back, and I want to ask you about inviting people to become engaged. Does the city of Reading accept and invite volunteers? If you just tuned in, and this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We're here learning about all the things that are happening in the city of Reading through conversation with the city manager, Barry Tippin. So if someone's out there and says, you know, I'd like to volunteer, is there places with the city of Reading that they can volunteer?
Absolutely. There's two key volunteer areas. One is in the police department, and they somewhat run their own volunteer program in collaboration with our personnel department. The personnel department runs this the general volunteer program, and so we have people who volunteer everything from, you know, sitting at a front desk in the lobby and help direct traffic and answer questions, to people who want to, you know, help file. We've had ex finance directors from Fortune 500 companies that want to come in and help, decipher spreadsheet. You know, so there's, if you have special talents or whatever, you know, we can find use for you. And we have one gentleman who volunteers, and we have some open space down off of Star Sacramento area, and he volunteers and he walks the land and picks up trash and, you know, just helps us in that way. So there's a lot of opportunities to volunteer. So contact our personnel department and they can set you up.
Yeah, the encouragement is get involved. I also know that we're at that time of year, you're probably working on budget, huh?
Yeah, unfortunately. budget, we do two-year budgets with a 10-year plan. So the way we do it is that we adopt a budget that's good for 2 years. We check in on it every 3 months. And then we make any big changes we need to make every 6 months, so every half year. And for reasons we could go into for another show.
Yes.
our budget is suffering right now. We're about, our estimate right now is about $5 million every year over year, that we are short, largely because of sales tax. Sales tax has just dipped pretty dramatically over the past 3 years. And so we're in the midst of trying to solve that budget problem right now. We've already held some police positions and fire positions because, you know, there's a discretionary amount of money. It's about $85 million that the council has true discretion over. So, you know, when people look at our budget, they go, well, you have a $400 million budget. Well, that's the electric utility, the water utility, the wastewater utility, the solid waste utility. It's the airport.
Yeah.
You know, it's debt service that we have to pay. It's streets money that you can only use for streets. And so when you shake out all of the, you know, things that have specific purposes, what's left is about $85 million of, you know, where the council gets to truly choose where it goes. Of that, about $68 million is public safety.
Wow.
So 85% of that discretionary money is already dedicated to public safety. So when you hear of things like, well, we're struggling with a budget and we're holding public safety positions, it's because they make up the bulk of the expense.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we're at a big challenge this year. And I know there's lots of questions about, you know, what have we done, you know, since, you know, the last 10 years to hold costs down. And so we've done a lot of review of that. I found an interesting piece of information. Since 2004, of all the positions we've hired, which was 128, 127 of them were either in the utilities or public safety.
Wow.
So we've hired one person in all of the other general government. So finance hasn't grown, the clerk's office hasn't grown, my office hasn't grown. They've all mostly shrunk since 2004. And so I bring that up only to say that, you know, we've been very stingy on using the general fund money, and we make sure that it's used to the maximum amount to benefit what the community has told us they want, which has been public safety, has been fire resiliency and,
yes,
you know, fire departments, and which totally makes sense. So we're working through that today and tomorrow and the next day and the next day until June. In June, we adopt a budget, starts July 1st, and then it'll go for 2 years. So that's March 13th is our next budget workshop. Again, anybody can come. It's usually from 2 to 5 in the afternoon, so that's not great for some people who work. The reason we do it that way is there's a few reasons.
Staff.
One is, of them. I have a lot of staff that attend those meetings, many of who get overtime.
Yeah.
And since we're trying to save money on our budget, it seems like we shouldn't be spending a lot of overtime.
Yes.
The other thing is just quite frankly, people are generally more with the program, between 2 and 5. We get later evenings and people get tired, and we want to try to have maximum focus on what's going on, because these are big decisions that have to be made by the council, and we want to make sure that we have dedicated time for them to ask relevant questions, to dig in deeper if they need to, so that they can give us really good policy direction for the community.
Yes, and they can find out information about when that meeting in March is going to be held on the website.
It's March 13th. It's not published on the website yet. We will do social media outlets, and we'll also do press releases.
Good.
And this time around, we'll probably put out some of our PowerPoint slides early, so that people could open those up and sort of go through them and see what's being planned for the discussion.
Excellent, excellent. We're quickly, time is running away from us, because one of the things I also wanted to have you touch on is 2018, we had the car fire, and that really impacted actually the whole region, probably all of Northern California, but it definitely impacted the city of Redding. And looking at now in 2025, any thoughts or reflections upon that?
Yeah, clearly that's been on a lot of people's minds because of what's happened down south.
Yeah.
I think we all who were here and lived through the car fire, just have just deep aches in our heart over what's going on down there and what mm-hmm. they're dealing with. From a government perspective, I'm hoping that they can come together as communities like we did. I'm not so sure they have the same opportunity that we do, given that we're a little more isolated and, we're a little more, I think, collegial as a people, if you will. But we came together so well, and we always do. It's something that I think we all would notice. We have big snowstorms, people spin out, people stop to help them.
Yeah.
That doesn't help. That doesn't happen other places.
Right.
And I always like to tell the stories like when we had the car fire and we were sort of past the worst of it, but we still had a lot of people in town from other parts of the country, other parts of the world, frankly.
Yeah.
And I saw a couple of firefighters from Virginia, and I went and thanked them. And they said, "Oh, you're welcome." And they started talking to me and said, "Who are you?" So I told them who I was. And they said, "We have to tell you, you have the best community in terms of togetherness that we've ever seen." And these were seasoned, grizzled firefighters. They weren't like newbies. And they said that back home, if they had a need for a street closure, and they asked one of the police officers that were there to call the streets department to set up a street closure, it either wouldn't happen or it would take 2 hours or 3 hours. And they said they asked for it here, and that street was closed in 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And they said they've just never seen that kind of response and that kind of collaboration between departments. And I think that just really goes to when you hear people talk about communities and it's like live, work, and play,
mm-hmm.
that actually is true here.
Yeah.
You see that down in communities in Sacramento and you go, well, that's not necessarily true. I know a lot of city managers that work places and live somewhere else. I work in Rancho Cordova, but I live in Davis.
Yeah.
You don't have the same commitment to your community that you work in.
Yeah.
And but if you live there, that's a big difference.
Big difference.
We all live here. We all play here.
Yeah.
Even if you're living in Palo Cedro, the reality is you spend a lot of time in Redding. Maybe mm-hmm. you work here. Maybe your kids recreate here. But you come in for dinner, whatever, right? You spend a lot of time here. And that just makes such a huge difference in how together we are. And I think we sometimes should take opportunities like, these other disasters happening and reflect back on what a great community we have.
Yeah.
And with all our differences, and we all disagree, and we're all independent, but we're one of the most fiercely independent together community that's ever existed, I think.
That's really cool. I can remember the chaplaincy, Billy Graham Ministries in Foursquare, telling me at one of the vigils we set up around the car fire, they had never seen a community like this. He said, you know, they said it was just so cohesive and thoughtful, and people going out of their way to help others. It was very powerful.
Yeah, from a government perspective, we had no resistance. We called the county, and Pat Minturn was the public works director at the time, and we said, hey, Pat, and we brought in the resource manager over there too, and we said, we want everybody who's doing a rebuild on their house to have the same process.
Yes.
Not different.
Right.
And they said, yeah, we agree. And so we collectively developed what that process would look like. We both followed the same process. So it didn't matter. So you wouldn't have, like, you know, you do in normal times where a person in the county goes, well, you had to do that. I didn't have to do that. You know, and you have this little confusion and complaints or whatever. Everybody had the same process.
That's
so
excellent.
It didn't matter what you're doing. When we had problems with county public health, and what I mean problems is that, you know, prioritization or whatever, and we needed something to happen, we would call Pat Minturn and he would make it happen.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that just doesn't happen day in and day out during normal business. But everybody recognized that, no, this is the top priority. This is the important thing. And everybody stepped up. It was really awesome to be a part of. I think, you know, if I name one single thing in my career that's probably that I'm most proud of, it's probably that car fire recovery efforts.
Yeah, it's amazing, powerful, and I think reflecting upon it, not forgetting it, but keeping it in front of us about, especially when we're challenged with things, how people came together and were there for each other is a very powerful thing to recall.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. It just, I think, we have a special community, and sometimes we forget it.
Yes, yes. I'm going to take another station ID, and I want to come back, Barry, and ask you about what's happening in helping the homeless in the city of Reading. If you just tuned in, this is a segment of Enjoy Exceptional Living. I am Lynn Fritz, your program producer and host. This program is in collaboration with Enjoy Magazine, KKRN 88.5 FM Community Radio, and myself. I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist. We are here in conversation with the Reading City Manager, Barry Tippin. So, Barry, when you think about the city of Reading, I know that there's the micro shelters that are happening. There's definitely issues around the homeless in Reading, and it's a challenge. Can you give us an overview of how the city is working with that?
Yeah, I think we'll start with what we've always done and done really well, and that is our rental assistance programs, which is called Section 8. It's a HUD program, and we help something like 2,000 individuals these days with rental assistance. And we've done that for a long, long, long time, and we're one of the top-performing housing authorities in the nation. We have like a 98% lease-up rate.
Wow. That's impressive.
Yeah. And then we also have for years, either through housing or through redevelopment efforts, been a participant with private sector companies to build affordable housing units like we talked about with downtown. And in the last 5 years, we've either helped construct or it's in planning or it's being built now, about 800 living units. So mostly apartments, but there's some homes in there. So we're very active in trying to produce housing, because obviously you can't put a dent in homelessness unless you have places for them to go.
Absolutely.
Right? So those things are incredibly important. And then you also have to have the ability to pay for that housing, which, you know, so the Section 8, and, you know, that helps when we get a unit built, you know, and so the whole thing becomes a system. In the last 5 years, we've gotten more active in, you know, more service programs or more helping nonprofits through grants that we've gone after. So the state has made it easier for cities to get grants to provide services. That wasn't normal in the past, because that was a county function, you know, and it was just sort of believed that the county was responsible for, you know, helping service providers. But they've opened that up, and we've gotten very active in that role as well with encampment grants and these other types of grants that you've heard about. And so we're working to help people get shelter, you know, immediate shelter in the hotels so they get stabilized and they can get assistance. We've helped, you mentioned the micro shelters. We've helped fund micro shelters, get them set up. We developed an ordinance that allows the city council to approve these shelters as temporary measures. Even though they could be there for 5 years, they're still a temporary measure, and they're allowed to be in existence through a license agreement with the city. We've went out and got funding and helped the Mission purchase a building right next to door to the Mission for the purpose of developing what they're referring to as a day center, day resource center, so that we can have multiple agencies co-located so that individuals can come in and they can get assistance. They can help get ID. They can help get set up for insurance. You know, they can connect to case managers that can help them get, you know, addiction services or mental health services. And so I think that's going to be, you know, a huge benefit for our community, because it's not going to be a location that is tied with maybe a religious affiliation, or it's just anybody and everybody who is providing a service will be able to be there at points in time, and people can access those services. But it'll also have places just to take a shower, to get a bite to eat, to get a cup of coffee. And so, you know, those are the things that begin to help somebody stabilize. You know, if they'll be able to have an amnesty sort of program where they can put their backpacks in a locker, so to speak, so that they don't have to have it searched and gone through. You know, sometimes that's a barrier to go in and get help because they have illegal drugs or something in their backpack. They can't bring them on to campus. So they get searched, so then they're not going to go. In this case, they can actually check them. They get a receipt. Then they could go access the services. They know their stuff's safe. They didn't have to leave it on a sidewalk. And so those are the types of things that we're really getting engaged in to try to help the nonprofits and the county do what they do best. That's not what we do. We're good at getting money. We're good at monitoring and administering grant funds. We're not good at providing the services. So knowing where our lane is and trying to help, you know, everywhere we can within that lane is what we're trying to do right now.
You know, I think it's also very valuable to have one location where they can access multiple resources instead of having to go different places in the community, just going one place. It's powerful.
Yeah, absolutely. And the Mission, you know, they've sort of made a change in their policy direction more recently. You know, for years they didn't take government funding. Now they've decided that they've seen enough success in other missions that have partnered with local governments and have seen positive results. And so they've made a policy shift. And so they have a lot of infrastructure that other nonprofits don't have. And so it's great that they've come to the table to work with the governments and, you know, side by side, because they have opportunities to offer things that others don't have.
Yes.
And so when you put it all together, you know, I think we have some hope for the future, because we're also working more closely with all of the nonprofits to try to be more collaborative, to try to make determinations on how should we coalesce this funding to do more and better things with it, as opposed to each individual nonprofit doing what they think is best. So groupthink, try to work together, try to make that funding go for more systematic and process-oriented solutions as opposed to individual efforts.
Yes, that's powerful.
Yeah.
When you think of micro-shelter projects that the city has been involved in, that would be Good News Rescue Mission. Who else?
Yeah, the United Way. They have one right behind the Robba Station off of South Market Street. And then St. James Lutheran Church off of Goodwater and Shasta View. They have four cabins up there.
And Good News Rescue Mission has how many units?
I believe their number is 15.
15?
Yeah, and then 8 at the United Way. And so those are alternative opportunities. So right now we have some hotel rooms. We have the micro shelters, and we have the Mission. So we're trying to also work with all the nonprofits to increase not only the number of shelter type beds, but the different types, because not everything works
for everyone.
For everyone,
right?
You know, it's one of the things I think, you know, people need to step back a little bit and realize that just like with everybody else, people who are experiencing homelessness aren't all the same.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They don't respond the same. They don't like the same. Yeah. You know, they're just like everybody. They're just people. They're exactly like us. And so if somebody needs to have a micro shelter environment for 6 months versus a congregate setting, then that's what we're trying to find, you know, trying to find those opportunities. You know, and then when you add in some of the other veterans housing for, you know, addiction help and those types of things, hopefully over the next few years, we can develop a system that is far more effective. And the other thing I like to point out to people is that patience is important here because, like it or not, Shasta County was a incarcerate them first county.
What do you mean by that?
That means that we held people accountable and we arrested them and we put them in state prison.
Yeah.
That didn't help them get off the street.
Mm-hmm.
It helped them temporarily get off the street. When they changed the laws, the Proposition 47, 57, AB 139, everybody's heard about those, that was no longer an option. We didn't develop these programs. Everybody else was doing it. We're behind the eight ball.
Yeah.
We need to step up the table. We need to develop our programs that work for us. But it's going to take a little bit of time because we're behind the schedule.
Yeah, yeah. That's just the reality you're dealing with. So the website where people can go, is it thecityofreading.org?
Yeah, it's cityofreading.org is our website. And then, you know, we have all our departments listed there so you can dive in, find more information. We're doing a newsletter periodically. You can sign up for that. So there's multiple ways you can sign up to get information.
And all the departments are there, including city council. So if you haven't been to a city council meeting and you don't want to go in person, you can live stream it when the meeting is actually happening, or you can review it afterwards because it's recorded. And other city meetings are listed on there so that you can participate. Look at social media, as he mentioned, Facebook, all the different ones you have.
Yep.
Yeah,
Instagram, and you can also go onto the website and find an individual council member's email. And you can send them a note. And they collectively are very good at responding trying to help out anybody who connects with them.
Yes. And that is something I've really enjoyed, is being able to engage council members and Board of Supervisors, our elected officials. They're willing to talk. They want to talk. They want to hear from the community. So I encourage people, instead of talking to your neighbor about what you don't think is going on, talk to the people that are your representatives.
Absolutely. Yes. And they're also very good at, when they don't know, they connect with, you know, me or my department directors, get the information and get it back.
Yes. I want to thank Barry Tippin, Reading City Manager. Phone number, if somebody wants to reach out to you,
it's 530-225-4060.
That's 530-225-4060. I want to thank you, Barry. Appreciate you coming in, sharing all the things that we didn't cover, all the topics we intended. So you'll have to come back.
I'll have to come back, and maybe next time I won't talk so much.
I love it. Thank you for being here. I want to invite Barry, myself, and our community to make this day and every day a day to enjoy exceptional living. Thank you for joining us.